The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
All right, Carl, thanks so much. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner, front and center this hour. The rally, soon to be 5 months and counting. The debate now, how long can it last? We'll ask the investment committee that key question. Joining me for the hour today, Joe Terranova, Kerry Firestone, Surat Sethi, and Steve Weiss. Let's check the markets because we're green. We are green today, except for the NASDAQ. It's a modest loser. A lot of talk, Joe, about whether the rally's momentum is waning as this quarter, month, and, you know, comes to an end. Our Delivering Alpha investor survey from CNBC, do you think the market has run too far too fast? Two-thirds say yes. We're in for a pullback. That's what they think. Do you?
I think everyone thinks that we've run too far too fast. I was in a Morgan Stanley complex yesterday, and all the financial advisors were talking about, well, when's the correction ultimately going to be coming? So if everyone's expecting and wanting a correction, guess what? The correction's not coming. There's an expression, never sell a quiet market. This is a remarkably quiet market. And if you want to buy insurance, Scott, go right ahead and do it. It's awfully cheap enough. The VIX is down at 13. So I wouldn't stand in front of what appears to be a very strong bullish trend.
So, Kerry, Piper Sandler today says, cool the engines, a 5 to 10% pullback could be coming. Investors aren't betting on that, right? We've been talking about money continuing to flow into stocks. Barclays today says a cash deployment is underway. The broadening's going to follow. Quote, an expected upcoming central bank easing cycle means there should be scope for equity flows to pick up and performance breadth to widen. They make the conclusion that if you put those two things together, the rally continues. Are they right or wrong?
Well, it's continuing today. What they're talking about might be, oh, I don't know, 3 months from now, is the rally continuing? I would say that the rally is going to go through a period of time where we're going to have these rate cuts, and the market wants rate cuts.
Hey, did you vote in this survey, by the way?
Yeah.
You did vote in the Delivering Alpha survey?
I did.
So
don't ask me what I voted
I'm
for.
I'm going to ask you right now. Sorry. I mean, what do you want me to do? Do you think the market has run too far too fast? Yes or no?
I think the market has run very far, perhaps too fast, but that doesn't mean I think it's going to go down yet. I mean, it's up 27% since the middle of October.
Okay.
Right, the S&P. But if we're going to have those rate cuts, and that's what determines whether people want to buy more stock, then you're going to get buying. What you need for the market to stop going up is some catalyst, such as NVIDIA reports a quarter that people don't like. There's going to be something significant that people start selling, and they haven't seen that yet, and they're unlikely to see that for a few months.
Surat, were you in the 61% or the 39%? Because I know you voted too.
I did vote.
We're all coming clean on it. Wow, why is everybody so cagey?
No, I'm not cagey. I did vote. I did say it's run too fast, but what I like about this rally is that it's broadening. I mean, today the S&P's up, but NASDAQ's down. So you are seeing money flowing into commodities. You're seeing money flowing into energy, into healthcare. So all the other sectors are now getting capital, and that's healthy for the market. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean the Fab 7 are still going to go where they, you know, to the Northeast, but I do think there's opportunity there. And if we get a pullback, it'll be natural. And who knows what causes it? I mean, the whole 27% was because the Fed actually said, hey, we're going to stop. But if the Fed ever said we might raise again, there goes your, you know. So I think you just have to understand where you're investing and be in the right places.
You got lucky. I didn't ask you directly. I'm asking you right now. Now I'm asking everybody.
I always get.
I'm going to ask the guys when I came in, how'd you vote?
39%.
39.
And I want
the market's going to keep moving higher.
Correct. And I want to be clear on something before you ask Steve. I only voted once. I think Steve voted more than once.
How'd you vote?
Twice?
Are you part of the two-thirds that they think we're in for a pullback or not?
I didn't vote, but I'll give you my answer now.
You know what, people? I've got to be honest with
Let's move on.
Some of us have actual jobs. to do.
Extraordinarily typical.
Well, some of us do, but yeah. What do you do?
Yeah, I could have lied about like the other three.
I feel.
Oh, I voted. He knows we voted.
Didn't.
I feel stupid. I should have known that you wouldn't have voted. Yeah. If only because they asked you to vote, you probably didn't turn your vote in.
Actually,
how would you have voted? How would you have voted?
I voted. It's gone too far too fast, but it doesn't. I don't know what to do with that information in terms of portfolio management. Sure, there are some positions that, you know, may be overvalued, may have gotten too big, such as, you know, I have a few of those that you cut back from portfolio management. But I don't think it means you exit positions that still have good fundamental underpinnings, and the price may be slightly ahead of the fundamentals from time standpoint. So, yeah, I mean, look, these market moves aren't natural to have this kind of movement in such a compressed period of time. But I'll tell you what, if you take a look to Surratt's point, and it's not just today. You take a look at some of the aerospace names, defense names, like TransDigm, TTG, or Textron, or Leidos. They've all outperformed the NASDAQ and the S&P. I mean, they're up 20%. So that's the real outperformance that we've seen the other names. So if you keep focusing on the mega caps and say it's going too far too fast, I think those stocks may have gone too far too fast, and I own them. But I'm not doing anything about it because the fundamentals are there.
People who voted in the survey that this is the top sectors for 2024 will be number one, almost two-thirds tech. So we may think, some of you may think, that sector's moved too far too fast. Obviously, people aren't willing to give up the ship yet. And they think that this is the place to be, that the trend is obvious, and that it's not going to reverse in a meaningful way anytime soon.
Well, I'm hoping that we're including comm services in that tech 61%.
Well, I think we are because
I think we are.
When we ask the next question, where do you stand on investing in AI? Well, they say it's best to do it through the Qs. That was the winner.
Yeah.
So you go broad. But then the second one was buy NVIDIA.
Because I mean, we know
what stocks sort of fluctuate between the two, Meta, comm services.
Yeah, I like comm services. I think comm services is where you want to focus on. But financials, absolutely without question, financials are having very strong performance year to date. And it's represented once again today. If you look at JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, Citi, they're all rallying significantly. I think this is a good environment for financials because they're underowned. And I think that's so critical. I don't think people pay attention enough to what is positioning in a particular sector, and there's a lot of room to rebuild long positions in financials.
So we're not surprised that almost two-thirds said tech, are we?
No.
At this point? Well, I was wondering whether, you know, the performance this month, where tech is number six in terms of performance, was the exception or the new rule, that you think that the broadening is going to continue, tech's going to take a little bit of a backseat for a bit, and these other sectors are going to run. I don't think the broad investing audience necessarily agrees with that.
I think Joe's right. I mean, you're going to get this broadening. We're getting it. I think you're fine to own tech, but there are other stocks that have earnings momentum as well and other sectors. And financials, to your point, and I was going to say is, look, what has happened since last year? Asset prices have all gone up. What are these JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, how do they make money? Wealth management, capital markets, opening up slowly, but opening up. So that all drops to the bottom line. Great balance sheets, dividends, and we're about a year away from when we had the blowups of the regional banks. And you still have a little hair on that, but I think there's opportunity there.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I don't think I said tech for that answer, but technology is such a big part of the market now. It's hard to bet against it if you think that the market is going higher, because that represents a lot of the S&P.
I mean, you've also noticed, you know, anytime there's been some significant dips in these stocks, mm-hmm. it really hasn't taken long for buyers to come in.
No.
Because I think broadly people would agree with you. And speaking about AI and technology, Altimeter's Brad Gerstner, he counts NVIDIA, as you know, as one of his top holdings, along with Microsoft and Meta. He is with us exclusively today. And we're going to get to his latest market thoughts in a moment. I know you want to hear from him on that. First, though, as you probably know as well from his appearances here, he's been on quite a mission to make sure the next generation is able to take part in this country's upside, including AI and these transformative technologies. He's mentioned a program called Invest America on the show before. But his big idea has taken a very big leap forward with the naming of a CEO council. Familiar names to many who watch this network on a daily basis. We're going to show them, Brad, on our wall as we welcome you to our program today. It's great to have you back. We're looking at this list, which is an A list of CEOs in this country. How'd you put it together?
Well, thanks for having me, Scott. It's a great day. And you said it. There are too few people participating in the upside of our markets. And unfortunately, they're losing faith in capitalism. You know, but Warren Buffett gave us the answer. Start with a really small snowball and a really long hill. Unfortunately, most people miss the first 18 years of compounding, but we can fix that, right? Fix it with a 401k-like account from birth. And what better way to accelerate those 401k accounts than to get America's best businesses to contribute to those kids' accounts of their employees? And today, America's best CEOs on both sides of the aisle. I mean, think about this. Michael Dell, Lisa Su, Mark Benioff, Bob Pittman, Dara Khosrowshahi have raised their hands and said, we're ready to roll. We're excited about Invest America. We'll contribute to those accounts. And trust me, there are hundreds of CEOs behind them who I've talked to who are excited for common sense, bipartisan solutions to fix this problem. So the government just has a really small role to play here. Put a seed into this account, 3.7 million children born every year, put a seed of $1,000 in it, in the S&P 500, it can't be traded, and then let the magic of our markets work. People can contribute, birthdays, bar mitzvahs, companies can contribute like these companies have suggested that they would. And if you start with just $1,000, contribute $750 a year, by 30 years old, it's $200,000 in the S&P 500. This is going to drive financial literacy. It's going to have a major impact on our savings rate. The sociological benefits, increased graduation rates, more optimism, better health, and more belief in free market capitalism. So I couldn't be more excited, more appreciative of these CEOs stepping forward, raising their hands. But the council is going to be very large. This is not a board. This is getting the biggest group of Democrats and Republicans and independent CEOs together and saying we can fix this.
You've said that the government's role is reasonably small. Nonetheless, you do need the government, obviously, Absolutely. To participate in this. And I know from speaking with you both on and offline that you've had many conversations with leadership on both sides of the aisle. Can you tell me how those conversations have progressed and where you really think we are? And let's not kid ourselves. We are in an election year two. I mean, getting two sides to agree in Washington on anything these days is a struggle, to say the least.
Well, I've been incredibly heartened by the reception on both sides of the aisle in both the Senate and the House. I think there's tremendous goodwill around this issue. And so we're making a ton of progress. Nothing to announce today on who the chief authors will be and who the co-sponsors will be. And it is a presidential election year. And the strategy led by Matt Lira in Washington, D.C., is really to build that coalition, to do the research. I'll be announcing some research in May that's brought together leading researchers on the Republican and Democratic side to provide the research underpinnings for this. And then we expect that this will be a piece of legislation that we can get passed in the spring of 2025. You have to do the hard work. At the end of the day, legislators will weigh in. It will be their program. This is about putting forth the framework for a program that we think can get passed in a large and a bipartisan way. You can follow it at InvestAmerica24 on X, formerly known as Twitter. and you can see the many people on, you know, that we announced that are out there talking positively about this, from leading Democrats to leading Republicans. You can't find a lot of things that you can get bipartisan support on today, but this is one of those things. This can transform America. 3.7 million kids, $1,000 per kid, that's $3.7 billion a year. That's less than one-tenth of 1% of our national budget. If we can't do this to get every kid in the game, I don't know what we're doing.
So you said, you know, businesses and families can add to this account, which you obviously expect CEOs to do for the children of their employees. It can't be traded. Can you go into a little more detail on that aspect? When can it be traded? When can the money first be withdrawn? How the mechanics of this are really going to work?
Correct. And let me caveat. At the end of the day, this will be part of a legislative process where people will weigh in with their best ideas, and they're going to have different ideas, and they have great ideas. So what we're hoping to do is put forth a straw man and then to score those different ideas to give the legislative process a boost in the, in picking and choosing what works best. But really to have this strong framework, 3.7 million private accounts seeded by the government. So, for example, it would be invested in the S&P 500. At the age of 18, maybe you could take up to 20% of it out for a qualified one-time expense. Think college, start a business, buy your first home. And if you add to the account, you know, you could add on a tax-deferred basis, much like a Roth IRA, that could just compound. We know there's something in the behavioral economic literature called the snowball effect. Savers save. There's a misconception in this country that poor people don't save. Not true. The big hurdle is getting a savings or an investment account open. It's a super high hurdle, not only for folks who without means, but for all families. So by getting over the cold start problem, by getting everybody into the game, we're confident, and the research suggests that those savers will save a lot more. Then there's a lot of debate at 18. You know, are they able to take out 20%, maybe more? Maybe you turn over all responsibility to manage the account at that point in time. I happen to favor an idea where you could take out, 10% more at 30, 10% more at 40, and then at 50, you get the entire account. But the most important thing is that we get this in the hands of kids. They open up their phone. They see that they own a small slice of Apple, of Tesla, of United Healthcare, et cetera, that are all in the S&P 500. Mm-hmm. That is going to be a game changer when they're learning about financial literacy, compounding, ownership, capitalism, et cetera. And so we're really excited. This is another major step forward. It's a demonstration of two important things. Number one, companies will contribute to these accounts, and that's a huge accelerant. The 401k accounts in this country is $75 billion a year, right? If we just contribute $3.5 billion a year to these kids' account, it will double the amount in those accounts. The second thing is it's very bipartisan. That I think is a warm welcome, in an environment where things are very polarized. But we have, as I said, leading Republicans and Democrats who are excited about this. And we can reinvigorate the belief in free market capitalism. Less than half of kids or half of people under the age of 40, according to Pew and Gallup, believe in free market capitalism. We need to change that.
Well, you continue to live ambitiously, Brad, stealing from our obviously most recent marketing campaign, and you keep working it and you keep us up to date. All right.
Will do, all Scott. Right.
Let's turn our attention, if we could, now to the stock market, to the S&P 500, among other things. Can you give me an idea as we approach the end of yet another solid month for stocks, a great quarter, obviously, what your current positioning and market view look like?
Well, you know, you and I talked when I was on last time. I said this year was going to be different than last year. Last year, we started the year, everybody was ultra negative. Remember, it was just 18 months ago. NVIDIA was $125 a share and Meta was $90 a share. It's hard to actually get your head around how recently that occurred. Everybody hated those names. So we were very aggressively positioned at the beginning of 2023. We thought that our return to target in our portfolio was up over 80% for the year. We thought this year would be a more normal year. Think 20 to 30% returns. And a lot of those returns have occurred in the first quarter or the first 4 months of the year. But if you look at the multiples, you know, Google trading at 19 times, Meta trading at 22 times, NVIDIA trading at 31 times, these are not bubble territory, but you do have to get your forward forecasts right. So we continue to own, those names in our portfolio and others that I'm happy to dive into.
So, I think some would suggest as they look at, valuations, multiples, and they say, well, just because we're not at historical peaks, that doesn't necessarily mean we're not overvalued. And a lot of these stocks have run a lot, right? I mean, NVIDIA, the multiple certainly has come in as the outlook and the earnings have come higher than many people have in their wildest dreams expected, certainly in the near term. How would you assess that?
So you really have to think about, how we got here, right? NVIDIA, the expectation for NVIDIA's data center revenues at the start of 23 was $20 billion. Instead, they did $100 billion. So their revenue was 4x you know, what was expected by the street consensus at the start of the year. So, of course, the stock is going to be up a lot. If you look at it this year, it's currently trading at 31 times 2025 consensus of $30 a share. Now, it's going to grow this year at 100%. The street consensus is that next year it grows at 20%. And in 2026, it grows at 10%. We happen to think it's going to grow faster for longer. And the reason for that is we think the global build out, the total TAM that they're addressing is bigger than currently in street estimates. And we think that their share of that is going to be larger. Last week, I was at GTC where they announced the Blackwell generation, and we do our own bottoms up research. We see what companies are ordering. We see what hyperscalers are ordering. We see what the sovereigns are ordering, and it's large. And we think they extended their lead with the Blackwell generation. Jensen is firing on all cylinders. And so we think it's, you know, really trading below 31 times, but it's trading at 31 times street. So, to me, is that bubble territory? I don't think so. We're in the middle or in the early phases of a phase shift. This phase shift is hard to predict. It's hard to forecast. But we think certainly through 25 and into 26, that demand's going to be greater than currently is expected.
I had somebody tell me yesterday regarding NVIDIA, the reason why they did not like it right here was while they would agree with the fact that, yes, they have this, you know, incredible lead, it is but just a lead. It's not a moat necessarily, and others are coming, right? There's the AMDs and these other companies that obviously are trying to chase what NVIDIA has already been able to monetize in many respects. Do you buy into that story at all, or do you believe they have something more powerful than some would like to believe?
Well, you know, I'm on the board of a company called Cerebras that is another competitor in the chip space that, you know, is building Exadata level supercomputers, you know, to compete with NVIDIA as well. AMD is certainly, doing their own things. Amazon and Microsoft and others are trying to build their own chips. But let's be clear here. NVIDIA is in a dominant position, and I think with Blackwell, they are extending their lead. Everybody would like for there to be another competitor. I understand that, right? You don't want to just have to order from one supplier. But the truth of the matter is, NVIDIA took down its pricing on the Blackwell generation, and I think Jensen described it. He wanted to make it a super valuable, even for those who have the thinnest margins, which means it's an extraordinary value to people who are using it for things like medical research, et cetera. So I think they're playing to, you know, maintain significant share. I think the market is growing super fast. Of course, there will be workloads that get peeled off by custom silicon, but the idea that we're going to have a real challenger to Blackwell, that's 2 or 3 years away in our estimations at best, right? And that assumes, remember, you got to go compete with NVIDIA and with Jensen. These folks are not asleep. They're already working on two generations ahead. So it's catching up with a runner that is a mile ahead of you and running just as fast as you. Very difficult to do.
Let's talk about Microsoft, because there's some interesting news of late that, you know, Mustafa Suleiman is going to run, he's going to be their CEO of their AI program. You, of course, introduced him to us, and we interviewed him when we were out in San Francisco last year, and certainly remember that. What do you make of that appointment? What does it mean to you as a shareholder in that company, and what he could, you know, potentially deliver for them?
Yeah, Microsoft's another great example, Scott. It's trading at 30 times next year's $14 a share, growing at 15%. And Satya is firing on all cylinders. There were a lot of people, because they owned 49% of OpenAI, a lot of people thought they're hardwired to OpenAI. They'll never have other models. Instead, they pull in Llama, they pull in Mistral. And now with the hiring of the 75 employees out of Inflection, they now have the capability to build upon their own proprietary models. And importantly, remember what Inflection was doing. They had built a consumer chatbot called Pi, personal intelligence. Now, this consumer chatbot competed with ChatGPT, competed with Google, competed with Meta AI, and all the other challengers in the consumer chatbot space. And so I expect, I read Satya's tweet just like you did when he announced the hiring of Mustafa, who's terrific, that he said, We're excited to have Mustafa lead our consumer co-pilot efforts. So I think what you ought to read there is not only that they're diversifying the models that they're going to be able to deliver to their enterprises, but they're going to be for real in the consumer game. They're going to spend real money on it. They know this is a $1 trillion prize to go compete with Google and others on this. And I think there's a big step forward for them.
The other gentleman you introduced us to during that program last year out in San Francisco was Sridhar Ramaswamy, who just was named the CEO of Snowflake. So who knew?
Two for two, Scott.
Who knew?
Two for two.
Yeah, who knew we were at the cutting edge of what was happening in AI at that moment? But thank you again for that. So you're a big shareholder in Snowflake. They dropped a bad report recently. They announced their management shakeup. And I know you weren't happy with that result that they had. So what does that mean for where your position is today? What did you do to it, if anything, after that stock went down a bunch?
Yeah, one thing I want to point out here, Scott, you and I have talked about this many times over the last 5 years. 13 Fs come out on different firms, and people look at the 13 Fs. And if you look at our nominal exposure in our 13 F, you would say, oh, Snowflake's like a 40% position. But, you know, you have people on the set there. They know from a portfolio management perspective that would be an unwise thing to do. So just to be clear, to start the year, it's a single-digit position for Altimeter. But you're right. We were disappointed in how they transitioned from Frank to Sridhar. We thought that could have been explained better, could have been done over a period of months. But make no mistake about it, we love Sridhar, right? We were pushing for that acquisition of Neeva over a year ago. Sridhar is an extraordinary talent. You know, you can read just the remarks on LinkedIn and Twitter about Sridhar, legendary, skill set at Google. And then just, it's really a product engineering-led transition. And this is a company that is in an incredible position as a data platform, but needs to continue to evolve to meet the world of AI. One of the most important things about Snowflake, I think, to remember is this. Over the last year, we had this question. Would companies leave Amazon, leave Snowflake, and maybe go to Microsoft to do their AI because they had the open AI model? And I think the one thing we can say with certainty today is that the AI workloads are going to the data. So the 10,000 customers on Snowflake, they're going to run their AI and those workloads on Snowflake. The customers of Databricks will do it on Databricks, of AWS will do it there, and Microsoft will do it there. It turns out that the data really does have the gravity. And I think with Sridhar, leading that company, they gave us really conservative guidance. We'll find out how conservative it was when they report Q1. Mm-hmm. But my sense is when you bring in a new CEO, you set the guidance appropriately conservative so they get off to a good start. Our expectation is they're going to grow a lot faster than that guidance suggests this year. But like I said, we're going to have to wait and see. But what I do know is this. Frank is a legend, absolutely. Couldn't have been more thrilled to help bring him in years ago. He deserves all of the kudos that have come his way. But they are not stepping backwards with Sridhar. Sridhar, as Frank said, is an incredible product-led CEO and the right person for the right moment at Snowflake.
All right, so let's do this. Let's take a quick break as we watch Snowflake shares rise a bit, because I want to talk to you about TikTok, obviously, given the position you've had in ByteDance. And then you have two new buys that I want to go through as well. Maybe all that's old is new again. We'll tease it that way. We'll talk to you after this break. Brad Gerstner of Altimeter comes back with us next.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier, because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one. Which means we do the little things right so that we can keep our promises and you can keep yours too. That's what drives us. To learn how OD can help your business keep its promises, visit odfl.com. Old Dominion, helping the world keep promises.
What does it mean to be rich? Maybe it's less about reaching a magic number and more about discovering the magic in life. At Edward Jones, our dedicated financial advisors are the people you can count on for financial strategies that help support a life you love. Because the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Learn more about our comprehensive approach to planning at edwardjones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back. I'm Courtney Reagan with your CNBC News update. A federal appeals court has ruled to delay the new Texas immigration law that would give local police the power to arrest migrants, keeping it from going into effect while the legal fight over it continues. Texas could ask the Supreme Court to allow the law to go into effect. The court will hold another hearing on the law on April 3rd. Democratic Congresswoman Annie Custer of New Hampshire announced this morning she will not run for re-election this year, potentially creating a chance for Republicans to take the swing district. The second congressional district, which is home to Nashua and Concord, currently leans Democrat by just 2 points, though, according to the Cook Political Report. And the first Mega Millions winning ticket of 2024 was won right here in New Jersey last night. The $1.13 billion jackpot is the fifth largest prize in the lottery's history. While 13 players across nine states did match all five white balls for the $1 million prize, Tuesday night's win was the first time the Mega Millions jackpot was won since December 8th. Scott, was it you? Share the wealth if it was.
You'd think I'd be sitting here if it was.
I know, right? I don't think it's anybody that we know in this building, darn it.
I love my job and everything. $1.1 billion, a lot of money. Courtney,
yes.
Thank you, Courtney.
Thanks.
Courtney Reagan. All right, we're back with Altimeter Capital's founder and CEO, Brad Gerstner. So we have some new buys to get to from the committee, too, but I want to get to yours. So it was last year where you were really negative on Alphabet, right? You had sold it, you... I mean, if there was a dartboard, you were throwing darts. The logo was up there, and you were throwing the darts. You questioned whether Sundar Pichai was the right person to lead this company after they, in your mind, had dropped the ball on AI, and now you bought the stock 2 weeks ago.
I mean, with Scott, I'm in the business of finding companies and opportunities. And so, as you remember, I bought the stock around $90. We sold it around $120 last year because we were, you know, after they announced, you know, their intentions in AI, because we were frustrated by the slowness of the changes. The company was not making the moves as we saw it to get fit in the way that Meta and others were. And then, you know, listen, I say everywhere on your show, on Twitter, on podcasts, what I think. And the fact of the matter is that the launch of Gemini was a disaster for this company. They haven't made the structural changes they needed to make. And the stock went down and reflected that as recently as, 2 weeks ago, it was at $130 a share. And that's when we started adding to the position again. And what got me back in the stock is for the first time, Sundar, in apologizing about the launch of Gemini, and Philip Schindler both came out and said structural changes were on the table. And that's key. This company needs structural changes. It has a whole heap of competition coming at it, like we just talked about with Microsoft, ChatGPT search that's coming out, etc. And they need to be on their A game. I do think that the wheels are starting to turn in terms of those structural changes. But this is still a smallish position for Altimeter. And we will continue to speak the truth as we see it. Obviously, this is a company that is super capable. It has extraordinary resources. Search is not going away tomorrow. And an important part of our decision, we did some research around what SGE, what's known as generative search, is doing on Google. And if you look at their generative search results, compare them to the traditional search results, what you'll see is there are a lot more ads showing up on generative search results. So it's no surprise to me, if you put ads above it, ads on the side of it, ads below it, the answers are also going to monetize in a way competitive with traditional search. But, and the big but here is, if your competitors come out and don't put all those ads around it, all right, if ChatGPT search doesn't have all those ads around it, if Microsoft and Meta AI don't put ads all around it, then you might have to respond to those competitors and it may in fact monetize less. So the jury's out on it. I would put it in the bucket of a trade that we hope to turn into an investment, but we still need to see those changes and we need to see, you know, how this evolves.
I'm lucky everybody on the show with me today here on the desk owns Alphabet, right? So what do you think about Brad Gerstner getting back into this name here?
I think that there has been, and it's interesting because about a month ago, Steve knows this, I said, well, I think technically you need to own some puts
against what looked like a breakdown in Alphabet, but it's endured a significant amount of negative news, and price did not fall concurrent with that negative news. That's a classic indication that the stock has found its right price point. I think people are beginning to rebuild positions. I like the buy. Obviously, it's a name that is in my portfolio, so I'm happy that it's moving higher. But I think it's one of the names of the Mag 7 in 2024 that is ultimately going to outperform.
Carrie, you own it too, right?
Yeah, well, Google is a stock that was selling at a discount to the market multiple. Everyone was talking about how they had blown the whole Gemini launch, and of course they did. However, this is a company that's been working on AI for a decade, and they dominate search. There's no reason to believe that they can't maintain their dominance of search. And they're one of the largest companies in the world in terms of revenue. And they have a huge profit margin. It just was, you know, gang up on Alphabet. And we were defending it. And I'm glad to see it behaving better. I'm curious, when we get back to Brad, how he's feeling about his Meta stock, because that's one that we've owned all the way from, you know, the time it was in the high 80s, 90. And it became our biggest position by quite a lot. And we felt that we needed to trim a little bit. And I'm wondering how he feels about that.
Brad, why don't you answer that?
Well, the first thing I would say is I don't think dominance in search at Google translates into dominance in consumer chatbot and generative AI, but we can come back to that later. As it pertains to Meta, listen, this company was hated 18 months ago, traded I think as low as 6 to 7 times earnings. Today it's at 22 times earnings, right closer to the market multiple, but I think they're outperforming the market. I think they're firing on all cylinders. You know, what people don't understand is this is a founder-led business. They're all still in their late 30s. You know, I call them in animal mode. It is incredible the work that's being done over there. They've really started to get efficient around reality labs and double and triple down on AI. I think most people probably saw on Twitter, you know, Zuck posted a picture last night of he and Jensen together. You know, we know that they're one of the largest consumers of H100s and presumably of Blackwell chips here in the future that will allow them to train the next generation of open models. I'm thrilled they're committed to open sourcing Llama. It's going to be the frontier open source model. And they have the place that you can apply all of this AI. It's making, you know, Big Blue better. It's making Instagram better. It's making WhatsApp better. And there are huge monetization upsides to all of those platforms that we've talked about. And then finally, what I would say is, you know, as a shareholder in ByteDance TikTok, if TikTok gets banned by the U.S. government, which certainly is a possibility, the single largest beneficiary in the world, according to my kids, will be Meta. Because I ask all these youngsters, what are they going to do if TikTok gets banned? And they all give me a snap answer, and that's they're going to watch it on Reels. And the reality is, if you look at the content overlap today between Reels and TikTok, it's very, very high. So it'll be a pretty seamless transition, I think, out of TikTok and over to Reels for a lot of the under 34s who consume all of this content.
How are you gaming the whole TikTok saga out? And to make sure, you're still an owner in ByteDance, correct?
We're definitely investors. I've been an investor in ByteDance for almost a decade. When it was a little Chinese company called Toutiao, a news feed in China. You know, let me be clear. I'm an American first, and I'm a dad. And so, you know, if I think that this company is violating the rules of laws in the United States and unwilling to comply with the rule of law, then it should be banned. You know, I just think the only tension I have in this argument is that I want to be better than China. I actually want to give companies due process and follow our own rule of law in terms of how that process unfolds. But clearly, the House has passed this piece of legislation. The Senate's taken it up. It looks like at the moment the Senate is going to slow roll this and consider their own legislation. But let's play this out. If they say that they have to sell the business, maybe they spin TikTok US to US shareholders and figure out a way to sell the business. But maybe the Chinese government blocks that. If the Chinese government blocks it, then it will get banned. If it gets banned, that'll be beneficial to Meta. But let's put in context what banning it means to ByteDance. Over 90% of ByteDance's revenues occur outside the United States, and over 100% of their profits occur outside the United States. So the consequence to shareholders of ByteDance is that ByteDance will go public in a year or two on the Hong Kong exchange. It just won't include TikTok US. This is not devastating, to ByteDance as a company, but it does deprive 150 million, Americans who like to go to TikTok for their content. They're choosing. I don't use it, to consume all of my content, but my kids do, and I don't ban it, for them. Although many of my friends have made the case to me that I should. So that's my view, that, there's a reasonably high probability that this will be either a forced sale. If the forced sale is blocked, that means there's a reasonably high probability that this will be banned. I think that would be unfortunate, but I'm also a realist. And if that happens, I suspect the company will go on and, like I said, IPO without TikTok US, and that a lot of those users or all those users will move over to Instagram Reels, which will be great for Meta. And some of those users will go to YouTube Shorts, which will be good for Google.
Joe has a question for you about another Chinese tech company.
I do, Brad, and I'm a big believer that investing in e-commerce outside of the U.S. is a tremendous opportunity. Full disclosure, we have ownership of Coupang South Korea and Mercado Libre, but China was the area years ago where I focused on. Pinduoduo, now PDD Holdings, was a name that I invested in. I'm no longer there. Very curious how you're thinking about a lot of these Chinese e-commerce names, if you think they've found the trough, and if we could include China in the theory and thesis that e-commerce outside the U.S. is a tremendous opportunity.
And if you're still an investor in that name that he mentioned.
Yeah, so we're actually an investor in all three names he mentioned. We're an investor in Coupang and Mercado Libre, both of which we like a lot. But PDD, we've had to trade around our exposure there for all the reasons that I just mentioned. I mean, let's telescope out here for a second, really talk about what's going on. AI, if you look at 20 years ago, technology really was not front and center in Washington, D.C. or in Beijing. Today it is. The economic Cold War, the front lines of the economic Cold War are AI, and they're based here in Silicon Valley. The U.S. government has banned NVIDIA chips, and now we're going after TikTok, and who knows? So I don't think it's not all surprising to me that Tim Cook and many others are in Beijing today meeting with Xi, because the response out of China would be, some retaliatory actions on Apple in China or Tesla in China, or many other U.S. companies in China. I happen to believe in global trade. I think it's one of the things that's pulled the world out of poverty and into prosperity. So I'm not celebrating that there's a new Cold War, an economic Cold War, an AI Cold War that's developing. She came here last fall, said, I don't want a hot war, I don't want a Cold War, I want a partnership. I hope that with whatever administration is elected this fall, that we can find our way to a tolerable partnership. I agree, we need to have a level playing field. I agree, we should not be allowing people to take U.S. data offshore and use it surreptitiously. But I don't think that means we need to be in the middle of a new Cold War with China.
All right. And lastly, since we're talking about China, a company that's lost market share in China, a company that has continued to cut prices in large part because of lagging EV sales, is Tesla, which you bought. It's been a terrible performer, as you know. I mean, it's certainly the worst of the mega caps, if you want to still call it that, year to date. Why'd you buy Tesla, Brad?
Well, Scott, you start with probably the best product engineer CEO on the planet. A stock that sold off a lot, right? And, when everybody else is negative about things, like negative on Google, negative on Tesla, that's when we start getting excited, particularly when they're run by a founder who's as extraordinary a product leader as Elon Musk. But there was a second catalyst, and a little plug here for my podcast, BG2 Pod with Bill Gurley. We went into this in depth 3 or 4 weeks ago, but Tesla, kind of when everybody else was asleep, launched full self-driving 12. This was their new generation of self-driving model on their car. I described it on Twitter as when I took a test ride in it as kind of a ChatGPT moment. In fact, I think Michael Dell said something similar on Twitter. Why is that? Because they totally scrapped their prior deterministic models and have moved to an imitation learning model that really, for the first time, unlike Waymo, which is still a deterministic model, feels like a human driving the car. So I think they're making massive progress at an accelerating rate on FSD 12. He's now pushed that out for free to all Tesla owners so that they get to sample, see what it feels like. If a meaningful or even just a small percentage of those agree to pay him $200 a month for FSD 12, all of a sudden this goes from razors to razor blades, right? Where people are paying for services. Think about that services transition at Apple that occurred in 2015, 2016. And it's the type of thing that other people can't easily copy. He's got 5 million robot cars on the road collecting data that's training this imitation model that makes it demonstrably better and almost impossible for all the traditional OEMs to replicate. So we like that for Tesla, but we also stipulate China's messy. We think a lot of the negativity is priced in. We think they could miss their delivery numbers next week. So you got to, you know, this is not for the faint of heart. You have to size it appropriately. You have to be willing to buy more, if the stock goes down. But betting on Elon Musk, particularly in the age of AI, where he is building market-leading AI and market-leading models around these cars, I think is a bit of a no-brainer.
We are going to leave it there. I appreciate you for being so generous with your time with us. We'll talk to you soon. Brad Gerstner, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. We will see you soon. All right, coming up. So Brad's not the only one making new moves. Surratt's made a couple. Weiss has made a couple. We'll detail them next.
You seek the key. But first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
All right, we're back. I mentioned we have some committee moves to get through. Surratt, I'm coming to you here. So you have a couple of, one sale. You sold Accenture.
I did.
How long have you owned that?
7-8 years.
Why sell it now?
After the last call, Scott, one of the things that I liked about it was, hey, they're helping companies with AI, and they basically said there's no really extra money in people's budgets to do that. So they weren't really getting too much of that, and the stock's 30 times earnings. It's done everything we wanted to do. So kind of looking for other opportunities to put the capital to work.
So you put some capital into, Weiss was talking about defense stocks.
Yeah.
RTX, right?
And you look at Raytheon, yeah, it's up 15% for the year, but year on year, it's flat. 2 years, it's down. 14 times earnings. They're fixing what's going on at Pratt & Whitney. It's a cash flow rich company and secular growth in defense. That's where you want to be. So cheap valuation, restructuring, doing the right things. I think you've got some runway here.
All right, I got some breaking news with Kate Rooney. We'll get back to you in a minute. But Kate, what do you have for us?
Hey there, Scott. So Amazon just announcing it will invest another $2.75 billion in AI startup Anthropic. This comes as it looks for an edge in this new technology race. It follows Amazon's initial $1.25 billion check. This brings Amazon's total Anthropic investment to $4 billion. Amazon had said from the outset that it would invest up to that number. This is Amazon's largest outside investment ever. Rivian was the largest before this. It highlights this all-out spending blitz we've seen going on by the major cloud providers on AI. Even at $4 billion, Scott, Amazon is still a minority investor. They don't have a seat on Anthropic's board either. Google, we should mention, has also backed Anthropic. Sources tell me that Anthropic was last valued at $18.4 billion. It is widely viewed as one of the front runners in generative artificial intelligence. Its foundation model and chatbot Claude competes with OpenAI and ChatGPT, which Microsoft, of course, has backed. Its founders split off from OpenAI. And these partnerships, they are symbiotic. Anthropic needs cloud computing while Amazon needs the AI exposure. Anthropic has said as part of this, it's going to use AWS as its primary cloud provider. It's also going to use Amazon chips to train and build its AI model, Scott.
All right. Kate, appreciate that. The AI arms race continues. That's our headline from Kate Rooney. Thank you very much for that. So you want to add anything quickly more on RTX?
I just think given where we are in the world, you want to be in defense companies and you want to have companies that have growth ahead of them. And I think Raytheon at 15 times forward earnings is a great place to be.
Weiss, you made it clear when you got into Boeing late last week, I think it was maybe Friday. That it was you were going to be in there for a minute. And in fact, you've sold it now. Just wanted to update people on that. We don't need to go through the whole thing. I do, though, want to talk about the fact that you trimmed some Microsoft.
I did.
So we talked a lot about AI today.
Yep.
Obviously. So let's come full circle
here. Still one
of
my largest positions, but position just keeps growing and growing. You got to cut it back. It's you know, it's a double-digit size position, so it's up there. But I think it's going to do quite well. It's just portfolio management. That's all it is. No reflection on what the company's opportunity set is.
Yeah, there's that stock. It's at $420. All right, we will be right back. Closing bell, 3 o'clock Eastern. I hope you'll join me. We've got Morgan Stanley analyst Eric Woodring. He covers Apple. Lots to talk about there. Dan Greenhouse, Chris Harvey, Victoria Fernandez. And how about this? Our friend Ron Insana. He's now the CEO of iFi AI. He's going to be with us with Rob Thomas of IBM. They've got a partnership. We're going to find out how AI is powering stock research, fundamental and technical signals. It's going to be really interesting. I hope you'll join me for that conversation at 3 o'clock Eastern time. Let's do some final trades here before we get out of here. Steve Weiss, what do you got for us today?
I'd be a seller of Tesla. On one hand, you can't say, hey, I've got problems with the CEO of Google. And the other hand, say, hey, I love Elon Musk. There are major, major governance issues there. Yes, he's a brilliant investor, but the governance issues you just can't get over as a fiduciary, in my opinion, number one. Number two, the board's still complicit. Number three, you're flooded with EVs. Prices are coming down. You don't want to be a U.S. company in China. So all the headwinds, I'm not a buyer, I'm a seller, I'm short.
Okay. Well, you are invested in the JOT ETF, which is not short. That's nope. long Tesla.
And that's my hedge against
I'm letting, I'm letting everybody know we're on the level.
That's your hedge. You got a problem.
Surratt.
Freeport, I think you've got demand increasing and supply going down.
All right, this is a Stephanie Link new buy, too, this week. Carrie.
NextEra, it's utility interest rates going down with positive.
All right, thank
go
you.
Ahead, go ahead.
Money Center Bank, as everyone's talking about Citi, don't fall asleep on Bank of America.
All right, see you on the closing bell. The exchange begins right now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.